You are listening to The Vanishing River, Voices from the Darling, a radio series interviewing real people living along the Barwon-Darling River system in western New South Wales, outback Australia. The interviews in this series were recorded in April and May 2018, and please stay tuned.
Jackie Pasquale grew up on the banks of the lower Darling River, where her forebears took up land selection in 1875. Earthling Studios met with Jackie at the confluence of the Darling and Murray Rivers. Jackie shared her concerns regarding the unhealthy Darling River system. The Darling River system is on the verge of collapse due to the government favouring big irrigators and corporations in the northern catchment.
What's wrong with the Darling River today?
The flows don't get down it, simply speaking. The water that once, through rain or through flood, in the upper reaches used to come down the Darling doesn't come down anymore.
What do you think is the problem? Why isn't it flowing?
Water use is being prioritised for irrigation, big irrigation mainly. So the flow of the river is now at the top of the river. It's kept there. It's used by big irrigation. It's used by big cotton, by big rice, and really by corporations, not by people. Now, I'm not saying there aren't humans involved, but there's shareholders' needs being met. They're not people's needs being met. So all the water's up there to create security for the crops. I'm sure that brings in money for the government as well in some way through exports. And that's been prioritised over both nature and the people on the Lower Darling.
Okay, and how long do you think this can go on for, like this, with all the water being used by big corporations?
Well, I think it's not sustainable in any sense, but people don't have a very long-term view of these things, so I'm sure cotton farmers think it's sustainable because they can keep all the water there. But for Menindee, Wilcannia, Bourke, Wentworth, and all the farmers and people who use the river and who enjoy the river, including fishermen, campers, people who have run tourism businesses, it's already too late. A lot of people in Wilcannia have suicided in January. They've given up hope. Lots of people in Menindee have lost their jobs and they're never going to plant grapes again, you know, because they won't have secure water. So whether they're irrigators or whether they're just ordinary people who love the river, for some would say it's too late for them already. I don't believe that. That let the water come down into Menindee Lake. And the only thing that's going to get to the truth is a federal Royal Commission, because the South Australian one will be good, I think, because we're all getting involved with it, but I don't think it has the far-reaching powers that a federal Royal Commission would have. So there's been a lot of lies, there's been a lot of mismanagement, there's been a lot of illegal things that have occurred that are not out in the open, that people in Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane would be going, what? Really? This happened? Can this possibly be legal? And floodplain harvesting is just one of these things. Who would ever think that it would be okay to keep all the water from a river system in one place to grow cotton that's going to go overseas for a T-shirt we'll then buy back for $2? No one would ever think that that was a normal response to anything. And I'm not an expert on anything to do with rivers, but as a mother, you know, when a baby cries, you respond, you know there's distress, and this system is in distress. The crying is loud, it's constant, and no one's picking the baby up, no one's doing anything to respond.
So how would people react to a warning from a doctor about clogged arteries? How does that relate to the Darling River?
Well, there's not just one clog in the artery of the Darling. There's capillaries that are clogged, there's whole arteries that are clogged, there's valves to the heart that are blocked, there's stents that are put in going from the heart to some other organs, really, that aren't even useful. So from a health point of view, if it was a person we're talking about, they would have been rushed into emergency, there would have been action taken. That's where we're at. This is a very, very unhealthy system that's on the verge of collapse. And once it collapses, it won't matter who you are, whether you're a big irrigator or a fisherman.
What would be the benefits of restoring the Darling to full flows? What would it mean to Menindee for a start?
Okay, so the benefit of restoring the Darling to full flows. For Menindee had a great tourism, potentially tourism trade, as well as grapes and other things. They were well known for the Menindee seedless. They had vibrant, vital ecosystems and economies. And that's what has to come first, ecosystems and people come before economies. Anyone who thinks that the economy happens separate from healthy people and healthy environments has their head in the sand or in the mine, depending on where they're living.
How does corporate law affect flows on the Darling River?
Not sure how corporate law affects anything, but I know that corporate law is all about the shareholders. If we have to maximise profits for shareholders, then if that's going to be our goal, then we're going to let everything else slide. And once we've done that, the shareholders are going to go, oh, how come, why is there no water now? When everything stops in 10 years' time, it'll be because we've destroyed it. So it's like killing the goose that laid the golden egg. Well, the deaths are already happening. That's not something that's going to happen in the future. There are already people, and we're not just talking about suicide, but if we're talking about poisons going into the river from fertilizer and from all the things that are used on cotton and rice farms, that water goes into the river, it goes into the groundwater. We're poisoning ourselves willingly. The boils, all the things that we're seeing on the children and the fish just show that we're creating a gutter, not a river. So if the flows were coming down the river from floodwater or from rain, basically, then it would be going through a natural filtration system. But actually what's happening with the harvest, the floodwater harvesting, is all the good water's being kept for the rice, all the contaminated water's been put into the river. Because they've got to have somewhere to put the clean water, which is coming from the floods, the natural, you know, the rain that's occurring. They dam it, they build roads, big roads that they call roads, which are actually levee banks. Hundreds of kilometres of levee bank that look like road that are actually dams, blocking off the water from going into the Darling tributaries. So that water is being used on cotton and rice and other things, I'm sure. But when they need to get rid of the water that's been sitting for a while, that's often contaminated, it goes back into the Darling. So it's probably, I don't know the percentages, but just imagine that 100% of the flood water is being held back and 10% is getting through into the Darling, but that 10% is full of contamination. That's what we've got.
They take the bulldozers down and just open the levees and let the water out of their ring tanks and let the stale water out.
Yeah, and they keep the fresh water. So what we're getting in the Darling for all the people, the children, the fish, the wildlife, the whole ecosystem's getting the poison down the channel instead of the fresh water down the river. But I think if the shareholders knew, and if the people who had superannuation that was being put into these big crops knew what was happening, and they knew how short-term the thinking was around it, that they'd be very, very unhappy. And they might even take the money out of their superannuation funds, and they might not put money into that big almond farm that's going to be using a lot of water that's not built yet, you know, but will be soon.
You are listening to The Vanishing River, Voices from the Darling, a radio series interviewing real people living along the Barwon-Darling River system in western New South Wales, outback Australia. The interviews in this series were recorded in April and May 2018. And please stay tuned.
And they might not put money into that big almond farm that's going to be using a lot of water that's not built yet, you know, but will be soon. And many other developments that are occurring along the Murray specifically are all about trying to build up jobs and development. But at what cost? We don't want to live on a river that's got no water in it. We don't want to live on a dead river. And that's what we're doing. We're creating this development that's unsustainable on every level. We don't have a high security water title anymore. We don't have it because we figured if there's no water, then there's no way we can use it anyways. People along the river have sold their high security water for huge amounts of money to other parts of the system. And how can you sell water from one part of the system to another part of the system? It doesn't make sense. Water doesn't run uphill. It runs downhill. And anything we're trying to do to change the way water sharing works is going to be detrimental to the ecosystem. We're destroying it because of the poisons and the lack of flow. It can survive just about anything. Ups and downs, low rivers, high rivers, floods. It's a very resilient ecosystem, but man has stopped the flows, filled it with poisons, and I really believe we'll go, I can't believe this has happened. When ever since we started monetizing water and making it about money, and every job and everything we've built on the river, we've been able to argue that we'll have some jobs. We're so short-thinking in the way we do things that we've failed to plan for having a future river, future artesian water. Once it's collapsed, there's no going back. We need artesian water. We need groundwater that's polluted, that's depleted. It's being taken by mines. We haven't even talked about that. The amount of groundwater coming out of the artesian basin, which is underneath the Murray-Darling Basin, that we haven't even ticked off on our little ledger of accounting, is huge, and mines are taking most of that. So mines, big ag, are doing a lot of damage, and they're doing it, I won't say at the behest of government, but they're doing with approval from the government because the money is being given to the economy from these things. And it's a false economy, a very false economy, when you allow these things to happen that cause a whole ecosystem to collapse.
This is The Vanishing River, Voices from the Darling. Interviews with real people affected by ever-diminishing flows along Australia's iconic Darling River. The Vanishing River, Voices from the Darling, is produced by Earthling Studios at Grassy Head, New South Wales. Executive producer, Mark Merritt. Field coordinators and technical assistants by Susie Peake and Kath Eaglesham. Interviews by Mark Merritt and Kath Eaglesham. Voice overs by Sally Hook. Please write to us with your feedback. Post Office Box 30, Stewart's Point, New South Wales, 2441.
The Darling is dying, please take my word.
The Darling River and Menindee Lakes are in crisis. We are working hard to bring out and share the personal lived stories and facts surrounding the problem to the people of Australia and around the world. We aim to do this in plain language that everyone can understand. To find out more about issues and matters related to the Darling River, go to the Vanishing River website, www.thevanishingriver.com.au. The Vanishing River.com.au.